Well, welcome everybody to this beautiful day, July the 6th. Hope y'all had a wonderful 4th of July. It was really great down here. Even though we had a lot of crazy, wonderful rain, there were some tragedies with some flooding. And so it's pretty scary with all of that. But we did have some spells of no rain, but now we're back into it a little bit again. And hopefully it's going to clear up and we'll move forward. These tragedies were pretty bad. I don't know if y'all read about what happened down here in Texas, but there was a lot of flooding and a camp flooded and girls are missing. It's just pretty awful. So keep those families in your prayers and we'll add them to our blessing today. But welcome. Glenda will be here shortly. We are going to continue today on the chapter Innocent Perception, chapter 6 from the Keys of Yeshua. Hope you all have had a chance to go over that, read it. I reread it again this morning. And also I kind of went through the application portion beyond the key part. And that was really great to look into. I hope you all get a chance to do that, especially about the receiving mode of things. And that was very powerful to me, that all perception occurs through receiving. And it's a curious thing that, you know, sometimes it's hard for us to receive. I find that hard to believe, but it's really true. It works in all of our lives that way. So we'll talk a little bit about that today when Glenda gets on board. So welcome again. So happy to see so many of you here. I hope you're feeling all the blessings of life and just so glad that we can be together each week. So if you want to start with me and follow along, we are on page 70 in the Keys of Yeshua, chapter 6. I'm going to back up just a little because it's very powerful what he had to say about our realizations and innocent perception. And he said that imagine a vertical shaft of love, will, and light passing through all stages of creation, providing an axle around which manifestation expands horizontally. This power turns the wheel of life. Now imagine a hub embracing the axle, extending spokes of light in all directions horizontally. These are the developing realities of life. As these spokes extend out from the hub, reality becomes more complex. At the rim of the wheel, cause and effect grind on the pavement of physical existence. When you study only the rim and the complexities of physical substance, you become trapped in the horizontal extensions and have no way of gaining altitude or higher perspective. Innocent perception allows you to penetrate the veil of these manifestations and experience creation as if it were all happening now. That's just, there's a lot to ponder there for me. Imagine for y'all too. But what really strikes me is that, you know, we do seem to focus on that substance and on that physical reality and on the realm of experience only. And yeah, we're here to explore. We're here to expand and create joy and have a joyful ride. But some of those experiences aren't so much that way. And so, but we can get really caught up in them. So Glenda asks Yeshua, it's been said that our consciousness is shaped by our beliefs. Is this true? And Yeshua responds. He says, there is actually a recurring cycle from perception to consciousness to belief, which in turn affects perception and consciousness. You are always experiencing something, new or old. All of reality has been given to you. Your willingness to receive determines what you experience. What you perceive is the gateway to experience and the catalyst for belief. You were created to be aware and self-aware. You were also given free choice, so there would be nothing slavish about your love of God or your perceptions of life. I'm going to pause there and see if Glenda will, when she pops in, if she wants to comment on this, but I'm not sure who said it, or if this is just an ancient teaching, or you know, maybe it was something from Ram Dass years ago, but and maybe some of y'all can chime in about this, that idea that your perspective creates your perception, and then your perception creates your reality of the experience. And that's kind of actually been helpful to me over the years, because I realize, you know, I'm meant to be self-aware. I'm meant to be conscious, and I can change things in a snap. Just my you know, how I direct my thoughts, how I open my heart, how I allow myself to feel the love that's there, and then, you know, just kind of changes my perspective. If I get really fixed and hardened, it doesn't seem like I get to experience a lot of joy, and problems seem bigger, and then, you know, there's really not resolution. Something that could be so little can be really gnawing and annoying. We had an experience of that this past weekend. We were at the coast, and we were without air conditioning for 4 days. And that's, you know, kind of muggy and hot, and we had lots of babies and pregnant moms, and it was pretty miserable to some degree. But there was Gary, my husband, just being completely calm, you know, knowing it's all going to be resolved. There was really nothing that we can do until they all came to fix everything. And, of course, I was getting more frustrated the quicker they weren't coming to resolve. But, you know, it was wonderful to see the contrast, you know, me being in my mind and wanting to fix it. And then, you know, he had a better experience, I will tell you. So that was really a powerful experience for me, just to see how it really does work when we switch our perspective. So anyway, I love that he tells us you were given free choice, so there'll be nothing.
Hello, everyone. This is Glenda. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Nancy. What do you expect from a kid messing around with functions on a computer?
I'm back.
You were doing great.
Oh, yeah, I got muted there for a second, but I'm back now. Yeah, so I'm so glad you're here. Yay.
Okay, hello, everybody. And Nancy, continue, because I'm interested in your story.
Oh, well, it just was really, you know, I think I shared with you quickly. I was like, oh, we're down here, you know, sweltering. And, of course, Glenda's response was just perfect like Gary's. She said, well, you've got the ocean and the pool. and so it was really important to change that perspective. And, boy, when you should do, and we were so grateful. It was really easy to look around and see everything that was, you know, we were in just joy about and gratitude and appreciation to be there, to have these opportunities to be together as a family. So it was easy, but I could see it when it, you know, jumps into my face and I have an opportunity, to kind of, you know, go into my heart, go deeper and have innocent perception. And, so anyway, it was a good weekend. So we're glad you're here, Glenda. How are you doing?
I am too. Oh my goodness. No one would believe it, but I went to bed around midnight, I guess. I'm kind of a late sleeper. And I just woke up like 10 minutes ago. Didn't wake up all night. Not all night. So talk about marathon sleeping. And I didn't prepare a wake-up call. No alarm, no anything, because I don't need it. Usually, if I go to bed around midnight, I'm up by 9. I'm up by 8 or 9. It's the way it is. So I was literally shocked when I woke up and looked at the clock. And so my first response was, well, then I'm going to be real fresh for this session today.
That's right. I love it.
That's a classic innocent perception. The classic one. You know, I could have fallen apart and said, oh, my goodness, I'm going to call Nancy. Well, I did call Nancy. But anyway, I could have just freaked, fallen apart and driven myself crazy. And I just said, wow, boy, I'm going to really be fresh today.
Well, we're glad
true.
About that. And yeah,
I feel fresh. And
you got good
I'm glad
sleep.
You didn't worry about me, Nancy, because I'm doing just fine.
Well, good. And you got good sleep, and that's something we all could use, you know. It's something people struggle with, and I love it when people can get a real solid sleep and feel rejuvenated. It's a good way to heal and to, you know, gain wholeness, you know.
Okay. Well, so hello, everybody. And I'm sure I was with you in my dreams, but anyway, it's better to be here with you where I can speak to you. Nancy, where are we in our program today?
Well, we are on the last paragraph. We were just reading that last portion about perception.
Okay. Because
you asked that question about, you said that our something about beliefs. It's been said our consciousnesses shape our beliefs, and you wanted to know if that was true. And then it's worth repeating. He said there's actually a recurring cycle from perception to consciousness to belief, which in turn affects perception and consciousness. You're always experiencing something, new or old. All of reality has been given to you. Your willingness to receive determines what you experience. What you perceive is the gateway to experience and the catalyst for belief. You were created to be aware and self-aware. You were also given free choice, so there would be nothing slavish about your love of God or your perceptions of life. And that's where we ended. We have one more paragraph, but there's a lot there, and we just touched a little
there
bit.
There is a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that I have areas, like in the neighborhood, or it could have been anywhere, even in my stacked-up garage, where I have walked through. I've looked for things, and I don't see it. I just don't see it. And I look, and I look, and I still don't see it. And then when I'm ready to see it, I see it. I've walked around our neighborhood and not noticed things at all for months. And then all of a sudden, I think, did they put up a fence? What? Have they renovated the house? And then I realized, no. It was always that way. I didn't see it. So the permission to be affected by perception is yours. Pardon me. I need a little water right now. Otherwise, Froggy's going to be talking instead of me. Okay. I'm back. A little water does wonders. Okay, so you have, I look for solutions to problems constantly. And I force this, or force that. It doesn't work. I pull it back. I force something else. I pull it back. And finally, I learned to just let it go until all of a sudden I see the answer. When you're able to actually see something, that's when you're really letting in your capacity for perception. And that capacity for perception is really tied in to your consciousness. And sometimes it can be accelerated or blocked by your beliefs. You could, you know, I've been looking for things in the garage, and at times I've said, I bet I left that behind when I moved here. Am I going to find it? Sure as heaven, no, I won't find it. And then something else will move around, and I'll see another box that was originally part of a set of boxes. I'll say, oh, there, it's going to be behind those. And I find it. So, yes, our beliefs can block our perception, and especially by people. Let's just say we've been in working in an office, and we don't have any direct contact with a particular person, but we've observed a little bit of rudeness. Let's just be mild, gentle, a little bit of impatience and rudeness that person has shown to other people. So we go into a state of avoidance. We just find another place to be. We don't go to the snack room when she's there, or we ask somebody else if we've got a question. Not to say that we've made judgments, but we have prematurely formed beliefs about that person. And this has happened to me, and when I notice that I have, and I just decide, you know, I don't want to live with that belief. Next time she's available, I'm going to go and say hello. And I find out she's anything other than what I thought. She's just completely different. Maybe she was either having a bad day before, or perhaps she had a particular cause to be grumpy. Maybe she had allocated a task and someone hadn't done it. Well, I might be grumpy too, but I think you need to check into your beliefs, because they're a very determining factor over what you're able to see. You know, I have, yeah, go ahead, Nancy.
Oh, I was just remembering a training that I did with Larry, and we were talking about beliefs, and it seemed like, you know, you have to kind of examine them from time to time, because there's ones that you have, you got to kind of, you know, get rid of them and lop them off of yourself. You know, you don't want to carry those negative beliefs, and it's kind of cool that I think, is it, no, peace is coming up next, but Belief Pathway Attainment is coming up before too long, and ties in really well to what you're talking about today. So mm-hmm. I would encourage everyone to read that. But yeah, I love that you do get blocked. You can get blocked just by a simple belief. Which, could you use that same word interchangeably, Glenda, with something I was talking about earlier with everyone? There used to be that statement. I'm not sure who first coined it, but it was, you know, your perspective creates your perception, which creates your experience. You know, and that if you kind of tweak that way of looking at things, or, you know, maybe eliminate a negative belief, or I don't know. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it fits perfectly with this chapter. The only other synonym or alternative word to belief in this context would be opinion. Most of the time, we call them opinions. Mm-hmm. But actually, referring back to Larry, God bless him. I hope he's happy in heaven. He's probably teaching everybody up there. just speaking from knowledge of my loved one. Okay, he firmly believed, and he really, it was kind of a maxim of his, is that don't say you believe something until you've examined it many times and you really, really do believe it, and it's a legitimate belief. Because we have a lot of opinions that function like beliefs. And he said most of them are negative. He said for every one positive belief that he had witnessed people having, they had at least 100 negative opinions. And those negative opinions could be something as simple as, oh, no, I'm not going to go down that street. It's kind of in a bad part of town, and I don't think it's safe. What if you needed to go down that street? Would that belief serve you? And what if you found someone, let's just say you had a flat tire, are you thinking there would be no one down there to help you? Well, that's why he had that exercise that Nancy was referring to, where people were given to write down their beliefs and their negative beliefs, and then he gave them a way of getting rid of them. And it was fun, wasn't it, Nancy?
Yeah, and it actually really, it worked really well, because you can always test it. And it was interesting, because you could test if you really got rid of something negative, because you would always know, because you would still feel it. Then you'd feel the effect of it. And once you didn't feel the effect of it, you realize, yeah, I really eliminated that from my life. So, yeah, it was really powerful for me.
It opens a lot of doors. And, you know, there are times in our life when an observation might exist that is somewhat negative. When I was a college girl in New Orleans, really out on my own for the first time, and with my own apartment, no roommate, I had to be careful about a lot of things. And I didn't want to be overly careful, but I was. And I carried some of those careful opinions with me later in life when there was no reason to have them. So I had to do a sort of a vacuum cleaner of my life and get rid of those beliefs, because I don't want to live in that state. For one thing, it's not healthy. For another, it tends to grow into judgments, and that's really not healthy. And then it grows into limitations of yourself, which is not a good place to be, especially if you're if you want to enjoy life and be a creative person and stay young. I would actually say, as a fellow traveler into the shall we say the afternoon side of the mountain, I've been over the mountain. If life is a mountain, I finished the morning side a long time ago, and I have been basking in the sunlight of the upper mountain on the morning side of it for many years. And I have crossed over the top, and now I have a whole new perspective on the fields ahead, the mountains ahead, and the people that live on the other side of the mountain. And I'm finding that attitudes and beliefs that I cultivated on the morning side of the mountain don't really relate that well on the afternoon side of the mountain. And surely they will not relate very well on the evening side of the mountain, where there's nothing, absolutely nothing to fear, except for fear itself. So I use that analogy a lot with myself, because I'll ask myself, well, what part of the mountain am I on right now? Because it definitely conditions the way we view life around us. And one of the big changes that I think you'll understand is on the morning side of the mountain, the sun is in your face, and you cast the shadow behind you. On the afternoon side of the mountain, the sun is at your back, which is a good thing. It warms you. It gives you encouragement and energy and confidence. But you cast a shadow before you. And it's easy to worry about that shadow. And what does it mean? And do I want to walk into the shadow? Well, there's no way around it. You will. If the sun is at your back, all you have to do is turn around and see that beautiful, warm sun at your back, and then realize that the shadow is there to keep you from worrying about things. You've already done it all. You've already been everywhere. You've seen every part of yourself. Why do you need to have the sunshine in front of you? You want it to warm your back and light your way. Light your way. So I use that analogy to direct my perceptions, and I find it a good one because it's an innocent one. It's something that a child could appreciate and walk into. Well, Nancy, let's just continue. Let's wrap up this message from Yeshua, and then we'll move on.
Okay, we are on the final paragraph, ladies and gentlemen, of page 71 in Innocent Perception. Yeshua says, although it is important to know and affirm your beliefs, I encourage you to develop faith beyond any limiting beliefs. When your beliefs are restricted by fear or founded on opinions and judgments, you will perceive little that is new. This causes a dwindling spiral of faith and consciousness. Fortunately, there is an alternative. Innocent perception becomes a way of life to those who seek in good faith to know life as it really is. Innocent perception is the heartbeat of freedom and the heart of a child.
Oh, my goodness, Nancy, those are some of the most beautiful lines he ever spoke.
They are.
Fortunately, there is an alternative. Innocent perception becomes a way of life to those who seek in good faith to know life as it really is. Wow.
Yeah, I think that correlates with, has to have one of the Beatitudes, maybe the pure of heart.
Yeah.
And yeah, he gave us the roadmap, you know?
Oh, and he has many times.
Right, right.
And I'm actually going to move forward. And, well, it's quoted here. It's one of the, it's under the correlation. So we thought it was a perfect thing to bring in right now, which is Matthew 5:8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
And I didn't read that, Glenda, till just now. That's funny. that came
yeah.
to me. Yeah, that's the Beatitude. Look at that. Beautiful.
And he said, let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for it is to the childlike that the kingdom of heaven belongs. He said that several times. He really directed us to look at this innocent perception of a child in order to know what heaven is. And I think one of the reasons is because ultimately when we move to the real kingdom of heaven, it's not going to be like a near-death experience that's being reported, and I use the word reported, not told, because I think it is a most legitimate experience to people who've had it. It does change their life for the better. But I think the words that make it unique and different from what we will actually go through is near death. We're not going to have to go through death to get to heaven when it's really brought to this earth.
That's a beautiful thought.
Yes. And how do we get our transition to heaven on earth? By the wisdom in this chapter. And I'm going to move on to the next of the correlations, next of the scriptures from the New Testament. We're going to read 1 Peter 1:22. Now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love of your brothers, see that you love one another with a pure heart. So it doesn't stop with perception. It moves into the purity of the heart. See, on this earth, in this world, because the world is so complicated and messy at times, we often say, I love it. I'll just adopt a name, since we talked about brother, we'll go to sister. I just love Marjorie with all my heart, even though, and in that even though will contain all the objections that you ever had, you know, and then it's like how you dealt with, you know, because she's so sweet and she's funny. And eventually, you know, she catches up to herself and she corrects what she's doing. But, you know, she's just a treasure to my heart. Well, that's how we, that's the closest thing we get to innocent love. We get to even though. With a pure heart, it's like, oh my goodness, here comes Marjorie. I just love her. And there is no even though.
There's no matter what.
You don't even have to put that, Nancy, because there's a little shadow inside that.
I just love Marjorie.
You could add some of the reasons why, though. I just love Marjorie. She makes me so happy when I'm with her. She's funny, and she supports everybody, and you just go. So you could add a list of attributes. That's a good thing. But loving with a pure heart doesn't have any, you don't applaud yourself for forgiving in the course of accepting the other person. That's a little backhanded.
Right.
It would be like, oh, I just love Nancy. You know, she's always been with me when things were down and when I couldn't talk to anybody else. She just brought such hope for me, you know. And I know she's been through hard times, but she's just great anyway. You think that's all positive?
What?
Well, you see, I didn't make a negative judgment at all, but I was aware that you've been through hard times, and sometimes you struggle to be with me, but you are, and I love you for it. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
The little add-ons creep in.
Yeah.
You know, the way I'd like to say, oh, here comes Nancy. She's my best friend since forever and ever. And she's going to always be. Do you like that better?
I like that better. Well, you know, it's like the pure of heart is like in getting into the reality of the way God sees things versus the way we see things. You know, something transforms. You know?
It's so funny because we could say, and actually really mean it, well, he doesn't bother with the small things. But that's not true. That's not true. He bothers with the small things. Like Yeshua said, he's counted every hair on your head. Okay?
Mm.
He's counted every leaf on a tree. There's not a sparrow that falls. He doesn't know it. So, yeah, he bothers with the small things. He just doesn't indulge us with the, he doesn't encourage us to get involved in the small things unless they're positive. And I would say because we never know, and it's so true, you begin to realize this on the afternoon side of the mountain. You don't know how much time you've got left here. You've got eternity left with him. And with many of your loved ones as they come to be with you, but you don't know how much more time you have left in the world where you bother with having everything put up before the storm comes. Why not just let the plants enjoy the storm and then clean up after it happens if it's necessary? You know, don't bother with the small stuff. So, God doesn't bother with the small stuff either if it's only of the world, because he didn't create the world. We did. This is our playground he created. Do you know that everything he created in the first 5 days of creation, he gave to us as our playground. Okay, when you create, you give a child a playpen, and you put the child in the playpen, and you put some toys in there, and you say, you're going to tell him how to play? You just say, have fun. Do your thing, have fun. And do you come into that playpen and clean it up every 5 minutes? No, of course not, because your baby's in the process of playing with things. And so he's got some things misarranged. Let him figure it out. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, leave him alone. You don't have to go fold the blanket. And he's not going to go fold our blanket either. He'll just say, well, this is your playground. Play with it. Make it the way you want it to be. And that's a phrase I hear a lot from Yeshua to me when I come to him with problems. He'll say to me, make it the way you want it to be. And I'll say back to him, well, for all the chaos, I can't see it the way I want it to be. And he'll say, yes, you can. You can see beyond all the clutter, all the clashing, all the lost expectations. What do you want it to be? And it'll kind of take my breath away. And I say, well, it's kind of hopeless right now. And he'll say, well, that's your problem. Where's your hope? Get your hope back. Where's your faith? Well, I kind of lost that too. Okay. Well, where's your charity? Well, I stopped giving in to this right now, at least for now, because it seems like I'm wasting my time, wasting my energy. And he'll say back to me, where did you get the idea that the Father that created you has limited energy? Where did you get the idea that there's a limited amount of hope and a limited amount of love and a limited amount of faith? Who told you that those commodities, those spirits were limited? I did. He'll laugh. And I said, well, you did it to yourself, kid. Stop that. Stop doing that. Get your faith back. Mm-hmm. Now, put your hope back in place. Get in the saddle and ride. There's a few times he said to me something he probably wouldn't say to you because it wouldn't be real to you. But he says it to me because he knows, A, it's going to make me laugh, and B, it's going to make me feel like the joyful child I once was. But I'll tell you what it is, and then maybe you'll relate to it, and he'll say, hey, kid, it's a rodeo. Get on your horse and ride.
Mm. Yeah. Engage with life. Yeah.
Yeah. Get on your horse and ride. And all of a sudden, I feel 16 years old again. And I'll think of myself looking at, I was, among many things, I was a barrel racer. And I would see myself looking at the barrel and deciding what position I needed to be in the saddle and how I was going to make that first lunge and get the horse around it. And by the time I think through all those things, well, my hope is back. And then by the time I get around the first barrel, my faith is strong because I am going to hit that second barrel with the force of the wind. And I do. And then I'm going to hear the audience cheering me. And they're adding energy to what I need. And I'm on the home stretch. And I'm seeing it happen. He took me right back where I needed to play it through and then apply it to what I'm doing now. So I don't know what analogy he would use for you, but I'm sure he's got a good one. He never runs out of common human teaching lessons. Back 2,000 years ago, the fishermen fished for a living. And he, or they, sometimes they were farmers. And sometimes they were tradesmen. But he would use the opportunities of common living as analogies, parables, for them to use to apply to their pursuits of faith in the greater way where they're being troubled. And I'm not saying that faith matters more in these troubled areas. Faith should be with you always in everything you do. It should be something, it should be the air you breathe. And when it is, when it's the air you breathe, you don't have to call it into place when trouble comes around to greet you. You just say, hello, how can I take care of your needs? And in saying that, you've actually brushed it off. You brushed the problems off right there because you've said, how can I help with your needs? And you say that to the problem. You don't say, don't inhale a problem. Respect a problem. Visualize a problem. And say, what can I do to resolve you? Put the problem in a third person stance. It's the best way to treat an illness. I was told when I broke four ribs, and that was on the 18th of April. And the doctor came in and I asked him, well, how long is this going to hurt? And he said, well, about 6 months. And I said, what? I can't be immobilized for 6 months. I've got a life to live. And he said, well, it varies a little bit from person to person, but you have to go through the process. And I said, well, yeah, I'll go through the process. And see, I turned 6 months into 6 weeks. 6 weeks after they broke, I was picking up 25-pound bags of cat litter. Now, that's not to say that I didn't feel a little twinge when I stressed myself, and then I'd sit down and not do any more for a while. But I had worked my way out to putting that injury in a third-person position. The big it, not me. It was an it, and it deserved to be at arm's length from me. And yes, of course I would deal with it, because if I strained it, I could notice and respectfully honor the fact that I shouldn't do it again in the next 10, 20, 30 minutes. I should probably take it easy, let everything go back in place and feel its own rightful place along my side. Okay. So I think this is one of the best ways of demonstrating the truth that so many people have perceived. And they were perceiving the truth when they say, create your own reality. Until I learned more of what Yeshua spoke to me, I would say to myself and often to others, Well, you create your own experience of reality. God creates reality. And that is true. But here's what I learned through deeper experience, is that reality is just reality. Those ribs didn't heal overnight. Now, they could have if Yeshua was with me to lay hands on them. I'm sure he could have just taken it to the ultimate, but he thought it was more important that I learned a lesson. And I think that's often the case. But what I'm getting to is that you can still honor the fact that the ultimate reality is God. If you break ribs, as I did, or whatever might happen to you, flat tire, a broken water pipe, it's a reality that's part of the playpen we live in. Okay? And you may need a plumber to come and fix that broken pipe. You may need to get a new tire or at least have someone come and inflate the one that's flat. Maybe take it off and patch it up. So it is a reality, a hardcore reality that you must respect because you can't fix what you don't respect. But it's not just your perception of reality. I was the one who was being a little bit airy-fairy by turning it into that. I didn't need that middle zone. I really didn't. What I learned as I grew is that you could put that, you could have that reality be real, but you put it at a distance from yourself. You don't own it as if it's something that is you. You don't say, I've got a broken water pipe and I've got no water into my kitchen. You don't own it. You've got buckets in the house. Go to another water faucet, fill that bucket and bring it into the kitchen. You see, we are too eager to own our problems when the right solution is putting it at a distance to where you can bring other people in. You could bring a plumber in to mend pipe. You could call AAA or some other road service you might have to fix your tire. Or, like me, with the ribs, well, I brought in physical therapy. And first day I told them, they said, well, you know, this may be 6 months. And I said, that's fine if it has to be that, but I think I'm only employing you for 6 weeks. So don't expect to be here for long. They smile at me, and I say, okay. And it gives me an exercise that was a little bit of a baby exercise, and I do it just fine. And I said, does you have something tougher than that? And they say, yeah, as tough as what you want. Okay. They give me something that was tough, and I say, oh, okay. Do we have something in between? And then we get down and dirty. We get into the real therapy where they had called my bluff and I had called theirs. And we got into the real therapy. And they saw that I was really dedicated to doing this. And I always treated my body as something that maybe a painting I was painting or something I was fixing in the house. And I would do my very best. I wouldn't dodge any problems, wouldn't dodge any pain. I would ask precisely for what needs to be done, and I'd say, okay, can we do more of that? And I worked my way into it to where I could own the reality because it was getting better. And I could be responsible for the reality because I was doing the work. And yes, I could say very proudly, I broke those ribs 6 weeks ago, and look at me now. See, I didn't have,
I just needed to put it at a little distance from me to where I could do the work without identifying with the work. What happens when we identify with the work is we become it. If I had become that, well, I would be saying, you know, I don't think that a two-wheeler is enough. I think I need to get something with a seat on it. So if I need to just walk along with my legs pulling me, that, you know, and I would have asked for more things. I would have just identified with it. But I took the front edge of the problem. I accepted it, worked with it, but I took the front edge of it. I didn't own it. So I just want to give a little different thread and a little different meaning to the many different attitudes people could have about their problems. Okay? It's not just an illusion. It wouldn't be a problem to you if it was. It's not just something that you push off because it's not real. You wouldn't have anxiety over it if it was. But you don't want to pull it in over your head and have it become what's now changed your life. And you are changed by it because it is in charge. You've got to learn to put these things at enough distance that you can really ask intelligent questions about them. And that there's room to pull in advice. There's room to pull in another person to help you. You've got to keep them at a distance. If they're a problem, you obviously, I hope you don't want them. Let's just say, let's just give this. You don't want it, but it's real. But you're not going to infest it with a lot of complaints. You're going to give it some air to breathe. And you might find there are even resources within yourself that could solve that problem instantaneously. Instantaneously. It may be somewhere in the act of respecting it, you could have a powerful prayer that simply removes it. And you might wonder, well, why didn't this happen at the beginning? And I'm still an initiate in this, so I don't have the wisest words that have ever been spoken, but my take on that would be God wanted you to actually own the problem first. Deal with the problem yourself. Have integrity to live with the problem. Appreciate the help that others were giving you in solving the problem. And then he saw you didn't need it anymore, and he took it away. I hope that makes sense to you. God does allow us to suffer up to a point. But when we no longer need it, he will take it away. And he said, well, if you had the power in the beginning, why didn't you take it away then? And he said, because you need it to find out how strong you are. You need it to find out how honorable you are. You need it to be grateful for the help that would come to you. You needed to know how much other people love you. And you needed to know how vulnerable you are so that you would be more careful in the future. You needed a lot of things that I didn't want to take away from you. And now you've honored all those things and you don't need the problem. I had that happen to me many, many times. And it's so lovely. And it's so lovely to realize how much above everything and everyone else, God loves you. Whatever your problem is right now, He's loving you in it. And you can take your innocent perception and turn it to your great advantage just by honoring the fact that you have the problem, that you have the senses and the ability to look at it, examine it, share it with others who are willing to help you. That you can even pray for it with honesty and respect, that you got yourself into that problem and you truly want help in getting out of it. Because you want to be all that you can be to get back to the life you know you're capable of living. You see, one of the reasons that God and Yeshua and the Holy Spirit equate us to children having experiences or being the ones who can truly honor innocent perception is because children are the ones who can learn. Have you ever noticed that your ability to learn has gotten less and less the older you get? Yes, you can acquire information. Yes, you can go to interesting places. And you can learn, you call it learning. I call it observing, how people live in the Netherlands. You can go visit horrible places, work camps, where people were consigned to suffer in the past. You can pray for them, and you can observe some of the torture they went through. But did you learn it? No. No, let's be humble about it. You couldn't. You couldn't possibly. You couldn't possibly have been there with them. But you can learn one thing, and that's that you're not there. You can put it at an arm's length, and then you can pray for the souls that were there. Don't claim that you've learned something when you haven't. One of these days, it would have been great for this chapter, but I think I'll move on. But one of these days, I'm going to tell you about my daddy. I've told the community so many times about my mother, who was one of the most creative people that ever walked on this earth. She could find a clod of dirt and figure out how to turn it into a clay pot. I'm serious. She was that creative. And with her ideas and her love of beauty and her faith in life, well, I don't have to go. I could go on and on about her. But I've never brought up about my daddy. And he deserves an equal amount of praise. But the problem I have with my daddy is if I even start to talk about him, I choke up, because what I learned from my daddy is everything I am. Everything. My daddy gave me my roots in faith, in charity, in hope, in relation to God. And everybody loved my daddy. Everybody. In his youth, he had been a pastry chef, and I'm talking about a top-level pastry chef. He had to give that up for reasons I'll get into when I tell you the long story, but he made the most incredible French donuts. He was legendary because nobody back in those days knew how to make a French donut.
And I came home from TCU, I was still commuting. And he was sitting in the backyard with the mayor of Fort Worth. And my daddy introduced him. And I shook hands with him. I said, "My goodness, I'm honored to meet you. But has the city extended itself to include Weatherford in its parameter?" And he says, "No, I came to see your dad." And I said, "Okay, well, you're a smart man coming to see my dad." And he pointed to a plate of French donuts. And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, the Lord of Heaven would come to get my dad's donuts. And so enjoy yourself." I was a little too intimidated, so I looked for a reason to excuse myself and go in the house. And they finished a long conversation, and they talked about everything. I mean, my dad was a core of wisdom that everybody sought to be with. It's kind of like this parable of the old Chinese man that sits on a bench by the road, and everybody passing by will find a reason to stop and talk to him. My dad was like that. I can't get into more because there's too much more to tell you. But the concluding point on that is my dad passed away at the age of 82. And his funeral was in our family church, which we had gone to for a whole generation, maybe more before that. It dated back to the 19th century, and it was a big church for a 19th century church. It seated probably about 250 people, and my dad had renovated the entire church. That's another story too. But at my dad's funeral, every seat was taken. And they had to open all the doors of the church so that people in the streets could listen to his funeral service and blessing. Everybody wanted to be there. There was nobody in that town that didn't love my dad. So I'll tell you why in another story, at another time, and another place. But right now, he's becoming more centered to my life than my mom. See, my mom was the epitome of the morning side of the mountain. Everything had possibility for my mom. My dad was the epitome of wisdom. He gave me my roots, and I am what I am in this work because of my dad. So you need to know him, and I'll introduce you to him when we get to the right chapter. But for now, we're going to close our discussion of the correlations with this line again from 1 Peter 1:22. I'll read it again for a second time. "Now that you have purified yourselves by observing the truth." You see, that's what I was talking about. "So that you have sincere love of your brothers. See that you love one another with a pure heart. You don't need all the embellishments that we try to put on love. We don't need all the cherub wings we tried to add to our signature. We don't need all the, you know, all the gifts and flourishes. Just love your neighbor, your brother, your sister, your family with a pure heart. That's all it takes. And it doesn't take the embellishments." Well, I'm not going to go through the keys because that would be way, way, way too long. And I don't want to take up a lot of extra time on that. Let me quickly go through the inspirations. And the first one I'm going to recite to you, maybe the only one, was from the Buddha. And he said, there is only one moment in time when it is essential to awaken. That moment is now.
And Glenda, would you read the last one too? Because it's the best too. It's so good.
Oh, you mean, yeah. Let me turn the page. Oh, yes, from Thomas Traherne, England, 17th century. Your enjoyment of the world is never right until every morning you awake in heaven. See yourself in God's palace and look upon the skies and the earth and the air as celestial joys. Such a loving regard of all these, as if you were among the angels.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. How beautiful.
It makes me think of your one word that you mentioned last week, which I think we've all been, could be a bumper sticker, and it was just behold. And you talk about
exactly.
That in the application. Yeah, it's
well,
a great
you see,
word.
That was the first word when I awakened to his presence in my life. He didn't want me to figure it out. He didn't want me to think. He didn't want to say how it was feeling. Just behold. And that's
mm-hmm.
what Thomas Traherne said. Just wake up and behold. And then we go through the rest of the chapter, and we will have the keys explained to us, this key explained to us in greater depth, but I hope I've done a pretty good job of it with my extemporaneous examples. And there's never an end. There's never an end to examples you can have about innocent perception. Just be the child that you are. Look around and see something you never noticed before, and you're there. And there will always be something you never noticed before, always, because we are so good at collapsing reality into manageable bits and parts. And it's essential. It's essential. And this is actually one of the reasons we get into judgment, because we say, well, yeah, but that doesn't belong. That's because we are condensing. We're trying to put pieces and parts together that belong together, and occasionally we find something that doesn't belong. And sometimes a pair of dirty jeans don't belong. They belong in the laundry basket, but they belong somewhere. You know, and it's okay to say this and that belong somewhere. They just don't belong here. And that, at that point, it's discernment. It's not judgment. If you stomp on the dirty jeans, then it's judgment. Okay. Well, Nancy, let's open the board just in case somebody's got a request. I did get your emails, and thank you for them. And those who wrote me, you are, well, all printed out in front of me now, so you will be thought of and regarded
well,
to God.
Yes. There's no one on the board now, but I will add my daughter Jane and her husband, and Yeshua knows and you know the things they need right now, so I will just
okay.
add them to our blessings today. But yes, we have a few moments here before we get into it. We do have a caller. Let me see. Hello. Area code C. Hello, 642. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, everyone. It's Linda. How are you all?
We're good, Linda. We're glad you're here today.
Yeah. Look, I didn't have time to pop on and request online, but Glenda, I don't know. I think you heard a big prayer today. I'm just in a bit of a predicament between two people that I really love, and I'm trying to make the right decision. So I woke up early and really prayed pretty hard today. I just came on to the last part of your call about keeping a problem as a third person. So someone heard my prayer, but if you could just keep me in mind, and hopefully I can make the right decision for everybody. Thank you.
I remember your previous letter, so is it along those lines?
Yeah. It's a concern for someone, but also, some time that I really want to come back and see my mother. I'm just trying to make, it's between two people I love, making the right decision. And I just don't really know the right answer. So thank you.
Okay. You'll find it. And
thank
it will
you.
Come to you. God bless you, Linda.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless. Bye.
And we're here for you. I'll pray for you.
Thank you.
Okay. We have Sarah online.
We do. Welcome, Sarah.
Aloha, Glenda and Nancy and our beloved community. I just want to affirm everything you're saying. We are so incredibly blessed, and I just feel more and more myself coming alive, waking up like you read that quote from the Buddha, just to what an incredible, incredible blessing, how much we are loved. And I just, each week I listen as I walk on the earth with my bare feet, and I can't believe how much I am just so soaking in and so deeply appreciating this blessing call, this community, and this life. I just wanted to affirm that.
That's right.
We feel it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's wonderful when you can get to that place of just such joy and appreciation and love, It's such a wonderful place to be. Thank you for holding that for us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I want to ask as well, I keep having this deepening of my faith in Yeshua, in my own divine plan. And I do have a really sort of a decision point, a choice point coming up. And so I want to ask this blessing for that. Yeshua knows, of course, what it's about. It's really me deciding. There's just my situation with my work and needing to stay here with my dad, with my daddy here in Massachusetts. And so I just ask for some special blessings of that. And I know it's like I can see it's not about the, quote, problem. It's like, I just know that I am guided and that it's all unfolding as it needs to. And so however the, quote, problem gets resolved, it's actually more about this opportunity to more fully trust, to have just to continue to live in this faith of being cared for by God, and that I just need to discern when it's time for me to act on something. So I just ask for that discernment for all of us and how we the actions we're meant to take.
That's great. Well, just be there. Be there and let yourself be loved.
Yes.
Thank you, Sarah. We're so glad you're with us today and that you called us. And we know your prayers are going to be answered because they're always answered. And you're so filled with love and faith. So thank you. We'll have a wonderful blessing today.
Thank you.
We love you, Sarah. And Glenda,
I love
we don't
you.
Have We love you so much. Love to your dad and family. So, Glenda, we're clear now. The board is clear. If you want to move on into our blessing.
Yeah, let's do. It's time. Everything that we do together has its own wonderful time, and it comes just as it's needed to come. So I am, let's see. Oh, here we are. So everybody, it's time now that we got out of our little huddle spot, wherever we may have been, melted into a chair, a sofa, a bed, whatever you use for your little comfort zone to listen. We want you to get active. The entire universe is buzzing with energy. You don't hear it because you don't have the receptacles of hearing. Dogs can hear things you don't hear. And every form of life has its own energy that it communicates with. Every form of life. Everything is energetic. The whole universe was created through energy. Countless frequencies and vibrations of energy. So let's just be here with that energy, and we've got to make a transition in order to do it. Now yours is going to be your energy. So you don't, if you've been seated, you can get up if you feel like. If you don't feel like it quite yet, let's just start with what we can easily move. Move, stretch your arms, because you probably have had your arms folded next to yourself in the chair. Stretch them out. Turn them top side and then bottom side and move them to the side of your body. Reach them up. Okay, and notice that every direction you move your arms, some other part of your body moves also. Everything is connected. So our hands and our arms are a great place to start, because we're awakening every part of our body. And we want, that's the whole purpose of why we do our little stretching exercises, is to get things moving and awake. Awakening is a really, really important step to innocent perception. You can see things in your dreams, but it's not the same thing as being awake and looking, or awake examining, or awake receiving. The first thing we need to do is just simply wake up. Now, if you're standing, stretch your legs, move one ahead of the other, and move into each leg so that you create a little stretching. If you're in a chair, then extend the other leg and move the foot up to create a little stretch on the back of the leg. Now point the toe so you create a stretch on the front of the leg. And with the other one, point your toe so you create a stretch. If you're a person who does frequent training, you don't have to follow me. I'm not a master coach. You can do your own movements and get into the best formula for you. But one of the things that I find is very good, and this is for people who can do it. Let's say you're standing up, and you put one foot in front of the other, and then you bend just a little bit to form the kind of step. If you were marching, you would, you're not going to do a squat on this. No, you're just going to bend that front leg a little bit and stretch the other leg. And now you reverse, put the other leg forward, and you fold, you bend into it a little bit. This does so much for your back because it alerts your back to be in the modality of moving, of movement. And then just stand and turn your back to the right and then to the left, twist at your waist, and then again, and move again. Okay, and bend forward as much as you can feel comfortable. If any of this causes you any degree of imbalance, then don't do it, because this is not calisthenics. This is not proving that you can do physical movement. This is waking up. I want you to lift your arms and then rotate them so that you exercise the, your shoulder and your shoulder blades and this area on the sides of your neck that carries so much stress for you. I want you just to work some of that stress out and get some movement coming through it. And now I want you to see something very, very simple. Innocent perception. And that is how much better your body feels just because you moved it. Your body was built for movement. Everything in all of creation was built for movement. We could do a seminar on the glories of movement. The wind blows in the spring so that it can distribute the pollen and the seeds that are now, that have been produced in anticipation of a growth season. Rain has to be moved. The clouds have to be moved, sometimes by strong winds. So they don't stay in the same place. Otherwise, flooding would occur. And that brings up a subject that I do want to include in our blessing. Blessing givers, please include this if you haven't already been working on it. And that is the sad situation of the flood in Central Texas that took the lives of, I don't know what the latest count is. I believe it's 34 people. It was just a sudden elevation of water in the Guadalupe River that rose within a few minutes, 26 feet. It was just sudden death to many people, and it flowed through a summer camp. All-girls summer camp, I believe. I'm not sure what the count of deaths there. I think it is 14. So we can only imagine the grief that the families are going through, having lost their daughter to a sudden physical event. Staying in motion will give you a connection to everything that's going on. And sometimes we back off and we just want to pull covers over our head because we can't stand it anymore. But actually, my friends, that's not peace. Peace is what you want. I know what you want. It's peace. But we have to be in this way of acceptance that will allow us to participate in the best we know way, we know how. And prayer always works. Pray. When you hear stories like that, pray. When you hear about catastrophes far away, pray. You send motion into the area of peace. You send faith and hope into the area of love. Whatever you pray matters. Pray every day. And not just walking prayer of walking along in a nice neighborhood to get your daily exercise. That's okay too. Chant and pray, fine. Sometimes we just need to kneel and pray. Because we need to put ourselves into a position where we have truly submitted to engagement with God. We give our life and our heart to what needs to happen. Okay, now we're kind of limbered up and we're in a little state of movement. I want you to sit down. This is the position you will receive the blessing. Feet on the ground, because you're going to connect the ground and the heavens. Most people don't realize, but lightning actually strikes from the ground up. Yes, it can be produced in the clouds in those glorious lightning storms that have no thunder to them. Those all are in the clouds. The kind of lightning that actually strikes the earth, it strikes it because the ground first called it. The ground was ready to receive it. So the lightning that strikes the earth was received first by the earth, and then the bolt was shot down. Read about it in the encyclopedia. I was shocked to learn that the first time, that lightning actually starts at the ground. Well, there's a great story we could probably be built around that. I think we could turn that into a parable, but not at this moment. At this moment, we're just going to keep bare feet, please. Okay? And hopefully you're wearing clothing or wraps that are natural fiber. It's just better because they have energy too. And the energy of synthetic products is different from the energy of nature and natural products.
Glenda, we're all here with you. You can tell that you're having a coughing spell. So the whole community loving
I
on you.
So, yes, I'm so sorry.
Not at all.
And okay. I was praying for you. I just had a momentary coughing spell, but it's passed.
Okay.
So, no, I was just appreciating the little things, the little ways we can notice the presence of God. I was remembering a moment of sitting down beside a thistle that was beautifully in bloom, noticing all the beautiful colors. And I said, if God created you, the Lord of the universe, the one who created everything, took the time to create you. And I felt it radiate with energy as if somehow it heard me. I said the same thing to a little bird on a limb. And I said, you're so beautiful. You probably think no one loves you
or is even aware of you. Well, we are. We love you. And we're so glad you're there. You're beautiful. And it flew off, of course, which it should. It was doing its thing. I didn't say that in order to capture its affection for me. I said it because it's beautiful, and that's it. That's all there is. When we admire, we give praise to you, O Lord, in all of our admiration. We seek to give praise to you, whether it's admiring a rock, a thistle, the breeze on the air, this potent summer season that's bringing so much growth and opportunity. We thank you for that, for we know that you are stirring the winds of change. And you're bringing opportunity to all of us that wasn't here before. We pray that those who have felt abandoned from previous opportunities will open their eyes and see a new world emerging. Let us all open our eyes and see new possibilities, for they are here. And they richly bless us. Thank you for bringing that in and bringing it in safely for those who seek it. Just as you would protect the bird, you protect us. Just as you love the thistle, you love us. And even more. For you have talked to us. You've taught us. And we seek to understand. We ask that you be with the hearts and the grieving souls of those who lost their children and other loved ones in the flood in Central Texas. Be with them and let them know they are so loved by so many. We blanket them with our love. And those who suffer in other places around the world, let them know they are loved. We pray that you teach us to love as you love, that our love may carry more blessing. Teach us to forgive as you forgive. Teach us to embrace as you embrace. We ask in particular that you be with the children worldwide and give them hope and give them love, charity, and faith, that there is a new future coming, that the kingdom of heaven is on its way, and they were brought here to be citizens of it. No matter what the trouble, no matter what, let us embrace everything new that is coming to bless our life. Most of all, we thank you for you and your love of us forever and ever. Amen. And amen. Now I would ask all of you to start your prayer, which will be personal, which will be directed toward that which you're most in need right now, that which you would most want to support and care for right now. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me that we convey the energy of the Holy Spirit, the grace and power of God's blessing and the love of Christ. Let us begin. your blessing has been given. Amen. Amen. And amen. We want you to rest. Stretch out wherever it's comfortable for you. Ideally, your bed. But a sofa would be fine. A mat on the floor would also be fine. Or a blanket on the grass. Just be horizontal. That's the key. And comfortable. So that you can just lay there and do nothing but be. Don't think and don't continue your prayer. Because that all goes to the cerebral cortex, which is a wonderful, lovely organ, but not one we want to use right now. We want to surrender to the grace and the will of God for each one of you, that your needs may be met and the needs of those who concern you may be met in the most gracious and positive possible way. Bye-bye for now. And my blessings go with you as well. Have a great week. Be blessed and give blessings. Be in the midst of blessings this week. As you give a blessing, know that you will receive one.